Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002, Houston's community station, 90.1 FM and HD1. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, ADC, the largest Arab-American grassroots civil rights organization in the United States, committed to defending the rights of people of Arab descent and promoting their rich cultural heritage, held its 2022 Alex Saudi Memorial Conference and Gala on October 7th and 8th, 2022 in California, where they explored the issues that impact the community while honoring Alex Saudi and celebrating Arab-American excellence and achievements. There were great speakers and excellent topics discussed at that conference, and in this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1043, I will air the remarks delivered at the panel titled Women in Coalitions, Challenges and Successes. It was moderated by Cheryl Farris. The panel explored how organizational and individual bonds overlap to affect and influence redistricting designations for voting rights, monitoring the police, and pressuring elected officials toward legislation that ensures effective changes for justice. The speakers on this panel were Buki Domingos, co-founder of San Diego's Racial Justice Coalition, Janine Ariqat, Palestinian Muslim American serving as the policy lead at the Partnership for the Advancement of the New Americans, and Tazheen Nizam, executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE San Diego. More information about the moderator and speakers is listed on our website, arabvoices.net. Let's listen in to the remarks and some of the questions and answers that followed.
My name is Cheryl Farris. I'm from Los Angeles. Actually, I'm originally from Fall River, Massachusetts, a very heavily Lebanese enclave in Fall River, Massachusetts. But I've been in LA for a long time. And one of the privileges I've had being in LA was that I got to know and work with and love Alex Saudi. And he's the reason that we're here today. He's the name of our conference. And one thing Alex did amazingly well and with love and kindness and patience was build coalitions. And we saw that after his death, with the outpouring of love from every community that came out to protest his death and to wish us well in our Arab identity. Today we're looking at coalition building, successes, challenges, as women do it. Women, well, look at us. We're strong, we're powerful, we're beautiful. Wait till you meet these wonderful women on my panel. I'm not going to go through all of their exact bios. You've got them in the program, and I hope you take the time to read them later. But I would like to introduce them to you. Over at my far right, that would be at your left, if I'm getting that right, Tazheen Nizam. Tazheen, well, first of all these ladies are from San Diego, so I don't know why they asked me to moderate, but I guess they wanted some geographical diversity, but we're pretty diverse. Tazheen is the executive director of CARE in San Diego, and which I know is a lot of work, a lot of responsibility. She's the chair of the North County Immigration Task Force. She's got an MBA and a passion for activism. What a great combination that is, right? To understand how the world works, because the world is a business world, and to be an activist. We're so glad that she came. I've met these ladies on Zoom, and last night and this morning was the first time I got to meet them in person. Wow, what a world. Yeah, that's absolutely terrific. Next to her, in the middle of our panel, is Buki Domingos. Buki has turned what could be a horror for some into a life of activism. She understands human trafficking in a way most of us don't, and she has turned that into a force for good. Isn't that the best that any of us can do, turn our prejudices and discrimination into a force for good. She's a musician. She has a weekly podcast. She is the co-founder of the Racial Justice Coalition of San Diego. And she worked very closely, very passionately on AB 1196 to ban the use of all neck restraints in California. Next to me is Janine Ericott. And Janine has not one, but two bachelor's degrees, a Bachelor of Arts and a Bachelor of Science. Isn't that nice? And she went to UCI, where my son went, so good for that. She's on the Partnership for the Advancement of New Americans, PANA, and she's been very involved in refugee and committee work. We've all had successes, the four of us. We've all had challenges. I did share with them when we were talking one challenge I had. I went to law school when women were a definite minority in law school at the time. And I got out of law school and I joined the Arab American Lawyers Association of Southern California, which is based in Los Angeles. And after a couple of years of serving, I was elected to be the president of that organization. I was the first woman president, but I'm glad to say that there have been other women presidents since then. During the 2 years I was president, there was one lawyer, one of the founders, who never came to a single meeting. He would not come to board meetings. He would not come to banquets. He would not come to picnics because I was the president and he didn't think a woman should be president of the organization. Soon as I turned over the reins to my vice president, he showed up again, my male vice president. That's the kind of thing we face as women. I mean, I've been prejudiced against because I'm Arab American. I've been prejudiced against because I'm old. In certain areas, it's hard to be an older lawyer sometimes, but a woman as well. So I'm grateful to the women who are here, and I'm very grateful to the men who are here who are going to hear this. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off, and I'll start with Tazeen, and we will each of the ladies will speak for 10, 15 minutes, tell you their stories, their struggles, and their successes, and then we'll open it up for questions. So thank you for being here this early, and Tazeen.
Good morning, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you all. It is good to be here. Doris, thank you for inviting me. Thank you, ADC, for having me. And Cheryl, thanks for the introduction. My name, as Cheryl said, is Tazeen Nizam. I'm the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. And yes, I have an MBA, so I am a numbers geek. So please forgive me if I get a little too technical with numbers sometimes. I try not to do these days. I started this office just in the pandemic a little over a year and a half ago. Before that, I did some contract work. I've lived in San Diego for about 30 years, so I've been through the tides of San Diego. And things have changed, but not all of them. And that's why we work every day. I moved to San Diego from India. I was born and raised in India. I went to high school there. And then for the last year of my high school, I was in San Diego, at college, got married, have a family in San Diego, been through different parts, lived in different parts of San Diego, but also been in different fields. So when my daughter came, I decided to stop working as a full-time, and I went working contract after she was a little older. And that gave me a lot of flexibility to do things that I really passionately wanted to do, but never got a chance to do them. So I started doing immigrants' rights work, and I live in north of San Diego, and there is a large Latino population. So we worked extensively with undocumented immigrants, DACA recipients, and we've done that over the years. And we started an organization called North County Immigration Task Force, my friends and I, and we did a lot of education, advocacy. We were part of the AB60 driver's license program. We came to LA quite a few times to speak and give input on AB60. We worked with the DACA recipients when they were getting their demands met. And finally, when they did get a provision, we helped them file for applications, DACA applications, and we've been doing that as a collective for a long period of time. And a lot of this work is not just the work of one organization, but a lot of different organizations in North County and across San Diego. I just say North County, San Diego, because I live there, and it's easy for me to step outside my front door and do a lot of different things. One thing that over the years, as I worked with the undocumented community, I, as a Muslim woman, you know, outwardly showing, wearing my hijab, did face discrimination, did have a lot of issues. And as Cheryl said, you know, as women, we always get that barrier of misogyny always come in our way. But as a hijabi woman, a lot of times, you know, people look at a hijabi and think, oh, she must not be very intelligent or sophisticated, or for that matter, even understand English. So those are the simple barriers, which we understand we can get past. But a lot of the barriers come when people within your community are treating you as a substandard citizen, for that matter, right? We face that a lot of times. I'm part of a mosque in my city, and there we were always asked to show up, and we called ourselves the side dish sisters, because when the brothers had a barbecue, we were asked to bring the side dishes. And at one point, we're like, we're not doing this anymore. Either give us a seat at the table, or we're out. We're taking our side dishes and going back home and having our own little party. So setting that precedent for ourselves and for our daughters to come. I don't want my daughter to go through that. She hates cooking anyways. So, you know, we have to set ourselves up for not only success, but not to accept that kind of misogyny anymore. Because if we keep doing that, as our grandmothers and our mothers did, we're passing that legacy on. So at some point, I had to put my foot down and say, I'm done. I'm out. And then when I started looking at my work that I was doing in the immigrants' rights field, I realized that my life is not just in one particular. So I couldn't just work with the immigrants' rights community and separately with the mosque. At some point, it all had to come in concentric circles. So there was a lot of overlap. And then once I explored more and more of the work, I started working more in political circles and stressing that political advocacy for all levels of government was so important. My firm belief is that your visceral rights asserted right outside your front door are so important. So that's why being involved in your city government, your municipalities, your school boards is such an important thing for us as minority communities. Because if they don't see you, they're not going to be putting forth your policies. They're not going to be putting forth things that are important for your growth and development. So then I started doing political advocacy. And then eventually, like I said, the CARE San Diego had seen my work, and then they invited me to join the office, and then I did. And the more I work in this community, the more I realize that if not me, then who? If not now, then when? So that's why I'm here in this space, forging boundaries, setting new limits for myself, and breaking those barriers every single day. And that is why this is such an important panel to be on, to talk about women advocacy, to talk about what we face and what we're not going to be putting up with anymore. Thank you.
Thank you, Tazian. Buki, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, ADC, for inviting me here today. And I am really humbled to be here and also positively surprised that the question I asked last year was actually taken very seriously and forming this panel this morning. I am Buki Domingos, not sure if I said that already, but thank you for the introduction. I came to San Diego, and I use the word came because the U.S. is never somewhere I chose to live in. When I was a younger girl, 17 out of high school, my dad was a diplomat at the time for Nigeria, and I had a choice of where I was to go to college. And I chose Benin Republic, France, or anywhere else in Europe. And my father advised me not to come to the U.S. And I said, but why, Dad? And he said, well, there is a lot of issues, that's how he put it, with people that look like us. So because you're very young, I advise you go to a European country where there are more of people like you. It's not great, but it's a little different. That's all he said. And so 9 years ago, I came to the U.S. Under circumstances I would rather not go into today, but the fact is I have 4 sons. The oldest is 25 and the youngest is 8. When my 4-month-old child was, the day he turned 4 months was the day we left where we were staying in Long Beach, California, and sought safety. That seeking of safety was the last 2 years. And within those 2 years, I had to gain full legal custody of my then 4-month-old child. Otherwise, I would be accused of kidnapping my own child because I had joint custody. So that lasted 2 years and forced me to buckle down and keep my 4 children in the U.S. So this is home, and I claim it, I own it, and this is as much my home as it is a home of anyone sitting in this room and beyond. And I take it very seriously. Importance of women in coalition. After that traumatic event, I sought out justice, not just for me, but immigrants like myself and anybody who was in a situation that had to do with the color of their skin, their origin or their beliefs or gender or sexuality. And in 2017, the Racial Justice Coalition was born. And it was born not because I needed to reinvent the wheel, but because I was new to San Diego, was not able to connect with the African-American community because fact is, though black, I wasn't necessarily one of them, quote unquote. So I needed an organization that was welcome to all, and everybody was one of everybody, where you could belong. It didn't matter where you came from. And then it began, the pushback. You're not from here. You're a woman. You don't understand how this happens over here. And then we have history or stories of people that are African immigrants jogging in the streets, getting killed, or even in our neighborhoods in El Cajon, African immigrants being shot by the police. And so I started pushing back and saying, when these disparities or these incidents happen, the police never stops to say, are you an immigrant or are you African American? They will fire at will. And this is my driving force behind the coalition work. We have done really great things in San Diego despite the misogyny, despite the languages of you don't understand how it's done here, despite the languages of let's show you how it's done, and despite the languages of you really couldn't have done that by yourself. Who helped you? So that being said, we were able to start an active campaign with the help of Dr. Fishman sitting right there. He has experience doing civic engagement, and we pushed for the ban of the carotid restraint. Then George Floyd happened. And why people were protesting in the streets, and some of our members were protesting in the streets, we saw our opening, and we seized that moment. We forced San Diego to acknowledge that this was also happening in San Diego, and forced the hand of the Sheriff's Department, forced the hand of the former mayor, Kevin Faulkner. It was out of embarrassment that they banned the carotid restraint. And this campaign lasted 3 years. But then we did something a small coalition with no budget has ever done before. We went to the state level. Through coalition building and personal relationships, we had access to Mike Gibson. And we were able to help craft the verbiage on AB 1196, to ban all neck restraints, so the carotid and the chokehold in the state of California. Even when people had said we needed to have a paid lobbyist, we needed a big budget, we needed XYZ, the impossible happened. We continue to organize. We're doing work around in-custody deaths, around people that are being killed by police. So we're working with family members. And just our main focus and our main goal, regardless of any turmoil happening, is to make sure that there is not just equality, but equity. And also to elevate the fact that immigrant women, be it black or brown, also have what it takes to organize in the community. We might not be from here, but unfortunately, we're plagued with the same sufferings. And I like to say we have much more barriers to traverse. Can't find the English word right now. But we have much more barriers to traverse than someone who was born and raised here. Though they come with their own cultural burdens, but I sometimes feel like I get it from all sides. I have to deal with the white fragility. I have to deal with people that look like me, but not quite think I belong. And I have to deal with the cultural shock that comes with staying in a place that you never intended to live in the first place. So really heavy. Thank you for, you know, asking me to be on this panel and just speaking about my perspective and why I think it's important for the inclusion of women in coalition, especially immigrant women like myself.
Thank you so much. That's great. Janine.
It's such an honor to follow Tazeen and Buki. So thank you both so much for sharing this story. And I'm also from San Diego. And so it's an honor to listen to these stories and really hearing about, you know, the way that I've seen San Diego change in the last couple of years because of the work that you both are doing. And that wouldn't have happened without you both. So I just want to really extend my appreciation and gratitude to you both. My name is Janine. I'm the policy lead at the Partnership for Advancement of New Americans, and we work on advancing the full civic, economic, and social inclusion of refugees. And we're really working with our African, Arab, Muslim refugee community in San Diego. San Diego County resettles the most refugees in any county in California, and that has really influenced the work that I've been doing here. My parents are Palestinian, and it's a critical part of my identity and my work here. I'm going to focus on our efforts in redistricting, which these ladies are also a part of, as well as I got to work with Assemblymember Christina Garcia on AB 2320 this past legislative cycle. And so really with redistricting, something I want to uplift was, you know, I have a handout that really shows a lot of our successes that I'll speak more about. But, you know, one of the initial barriers working at the county level with our county really progressive partners and people with well intentions was not understanding the fact that as Arabs, we don't show up in the census. And therefore, we're not showing up in the citizens' voting age population or racially polarized voting analysis that independent commissioners, that city councils, that folks who are drawing the lines are using to draw and update the lines. And so a lot of the challenges in the first almost 6 months of our work and in coalition was trying to get our partners, trying to get commissioners, trying to get city council to understand what it means for our community and how just because we're not in the data, we still exist, and these lines have direct implications on our day-to-day lives. And a big part of that meant that, you know, being a young woman in these coalitions and not being able to have the data back it up, there were a lot of challenges with that. That, you know, what do you mean that there's this percent of you guys living here? We don't see it. We don't see it in the numbers. It looks like it's a majority white district, and we know that the voting looks like it's going a certain way. And so there was a lot of really needing to lean on like our partners, our allies, and our community to show others that we are in fact here and we have a strong voice. And I will say, you know, at the county, we were successful when we broke into our own little coalition with CARE, with Pillars of the Community, with Asian Solidarity Collective, and others that I'm not naming right now, but really, and centering our communities, because we knew that if we didn't work really hard and stay diligent and continue to meet with commissioners and have presentations and advocacy letters, that we were going to fall through the cracks. And I'm proud to say that at the county level, we're united into one district for the first time, which is huge. And at the state level, we wouldn't have been counted at all if I didn't get a chance to participate in the Black Census and Redistricting Hub representing PANA. And our partners at the California Black State Redistricting Hub really saw an alignment with our African refugee community and our Arab refugee community in San Diego County, and the fact that our power is together and in numbers. And I really want to emphasize, I think like Buki and Tazin said, this idea of needing diverse coalitions, because we can't win these fights alone. And in the city of El Cajon, you know, we had a lot of challenges as coalitions, but also working with a city council who is drawing the lines, who is all white, and who, you know, I'm going to name, are racist, are Islamophobic. They don't see a benefit to our community, and because we didn't show up in the numbers, kept saying, you're saying that you guys have increased, but the data isn't showing that. It's not enough for us to draw the lines. Or we haven't heard from the Latino community. It's not enough to say that this new Arab community that aren't voters yet are enough to change the lines. And it was a really devastating loss for the community. But we're working on it. We have 10 more years to learn from our mistakes in the city of El Cajon, because we won big at the state level. And we're really able to reunite our communities at the state level. And I think it's because of us working together. And some of the most exciting thing was being able to have fight for language access for our newcomer communities. So at the first time in the city of El Cajon, the county of San Diego, and at the state commission, we had community members calling in, speaking in Arabic, speaking in Somali, Oromo, Dari, Pashto, and really, you know, recentering that. Like Buki said, we do all belong here, and we have a history here, and we're not planning on leaving. And I think just on the last piece around AB 2320 that I got to work with Assemblymember Christina Garcia, it was a bill that was working on providing direct funds to frontline clinics to improve reproductive health care services, specifically for Black, Indigenous, people of color communities, because we know that those clinics are the most underfunded. And we know that we don't have data to support our community specifically. And so a lot of this grant, unfortunately, the governor vetoed it, but it did make it to his desk, which is a win. And we plan to bring it again next year because of the strong coalition. But really, again, creating this narrative at the state level that, you know, the Arab community is here, we do exist, and we have the same issues as other communities, and we are stronger together. I think the last piece I'll end on is, it was an honor to work on AB 2320 as part of the Solis Policy Institute and the Women's Foundation of California. But I was the only Arab in the cohort. And it's a common thing that I'm finding as I'm growing into the policy space, is there's not a lot of us there. And it's not because we're not working in the space. I know so many of us in this room are working directly on the ground. But so many, there are a lot of barriers for our communities. And I think it's important for us to continue to push and encourage each other to apply for these fellowships and to really make a change. I think our next campaign, a lot of us were talking yesterday around census and ensuring that we get a category, because I do believe that we can change the shape of this nation together and for our communities.
You're listening to Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. What we are listening to are the remarks delivered at a panel titled Women in Coalitions, Challenges and Successes. It was one of several panels organized by the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, ADC, at its 2022 Alex Saude Memorial Conference and Gala held in October 2022 in California. Let's continue listening to the remaining remarks and some of the questions and answers that followed.
I'd like to pick up on a couple of things that different people have said. Tazin, you mentioned getting resistance within your own community, and we've all experienced that. Would the three of you like to share on times that you've actually met resistance where you shouldn't get it? I mean, you know, where it's within our own group.
Where do I start?
Exactly.
Right. So there's different levels to that. First of all, you know, the misogyny, because as women, we're not given the space, the voice, the platform to express ourselves. We're not given the dignity of having the emotional intelligence or the sophistication to make decisions, to make policies, to begin this work. And That being said, that tide is changing. So with our new influx of wonderful leaders like Janine and people of her generation, that is changing. And I hope that that continues. But I'm afraid of one thing is if we today, as the older generation, don't create that space, don't give way to this new wave of thought, we will lose this generation. So the resistance that just happens, it's like, you know, I gave an example of the mosque because that is just a microcosm of what is actually out there. I'll tell you recently, like just a couple weeks ago, I was organizing the event and there was a lot of people. It was at an Islamic center and a gentleman said to me, "Are you the host assistant? Because I made the mistake of offering him tea." I shouldn't have, right? No. So that's the kind of, you know, mentality that we deal with every day. And even when, you know, like a person like myself comes into a space, is I am not given the same space, the same respect, or the same support as my male counterparts were for years and years. I would think in my mind, they'll be like, okay, so she's new to the space. She has, this is a different time. I mean, post-pandemic, everything is different. I need the added support, not lesser support. And to get our leaders to see that, not just in the Muslim world, in the immigrant world, because if we don't do it in our own homes and in our own spaces, we don't expect the outside world to do it. Right. When you explain something to your child, if you don't institute those policies at home, if you don't practice those good manners at home, you don't expect them to take it outside. And the same concept follows. If our black and brown communities don't support us, we don't expect our allies who do not understand our struggles to support us. So charity has to begin at home.
Okay, or Janine, any thoughts on that?
Well, it's a very profound question, getting resistance. I kind of feel like when I walk out of my door every day, I get resistance. At my day job as a nurse in a very busy emergency department, in the organizing space, And I cannot, to full disclosure, this resistance did not just start when I came to the U.S. I've been getting resistance since I went to college and since I, you know, started living in Germany, which was actually my country of choice that I migrated to and went to college there. So getting resistance in context of the activist space, which I assume your question is, from a woman's perspective, is I get resistance on many levels. One, my accent. Two, the fact that I moved here 9 years ago or came here 9 years ago. And three, the fact that I'm also a woman. And I'll quickly explain. My accent, I often get corrected in personal and professional spaces on how things are pronounced. And before I would quickly correct myself, but 5 years down the road, I think to myself, I started responding, I have an accent. And no, that word is not wrong. It's just how I pronounce it. And I keep it moving. So that stopped. In the professional space, getting resistance is the how policy operates. I lean heavily on Dr. Fishman for the academia side of it, but there's something that we can never learn in school, which is life experience. I have started friendships with people that have life experience who may not have degrees in their pockets. I learn a lot from them. And I carry those, what I have learned, to different spaces, regardless of the pushback. So there's resistance there. And as a black woman, I get resistance because it's assumed that with this culture that women, black women, and not necessarily as intelligent or as culturally competent or professionally competent as any other woman. I see myself as a professional, but even then in the activist space, I get questioned all the time. Even when I was on the CLERB, which is the Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board, I believe I was the only medical professional that was hired onto the CLERB. I believe that I was the only immigrant Black woman hired onto the CLERB, not going into their history. But I also know this for a fact that in closed session, I received a lot of pushback, and I had to fight, not in aggressive tones, but I had to fight with my intellect. Because my argument was, I am a professional of 20 years, I have 2 nursing degrees in 2 different continents, and I have seen healthcare from different sides. And their biggest resistance I got was I was asked to leave the board after 8 months. So that, for me, is one of the biggest resistance I've ever gotten. And the discussion around the water cooler, like I was told by one of the San Diegan leaders, was they needed me off, not because I was not a good fit for the board, but because I needed to stop reading those medical reports. But one change I was able to effect was the fact that the common denominator for in-custody deaths, overdoses, was fentanyl. And it took me all it 3 months to figure out.
Thank you both for sharing. It's I really appreciate, you know, again, like the work that you're all doing and hearing this again. I think your question was about resistance within the organizing space or within our community, I think there's really similar themes that Buki and Tazeen has shared and overlap. And I think something that stands out right is this need, I think all of us shared, is this need that we have to come with 2 times the evidence to prove ourselves, that what we're saying is a fact. I can't count the times in these redistricting meetings where I'm, you know, I've read the state statute and I'm sharing it and having partners say, no, where did you get that? That's not true. And then going and them reading the statute and it in fact was true. And again, in our interactions with elected officials and commissions and unfortunately in the progressive organizing space that there's this inclination to not believe women. There's this inclination that young women don't know what they're talking about and that don't have enough experience or knowledge on these issues. I think that the most disheartening is facing it within our community, right? That when I'm going to community leaders and asking them to, you know, I got the city council to you know, provide language access, or we have this, all I need is for you to mobilize community to come out. Can you help me? Can you make an announcement? Can you do this at the event? And the call being, okay, amo, and then no follow-up, right? And I have the utmost respect for our community leaders, and I think that's why I'm here today. I'm a product of the Palestinian community in San Diego. I don't deny that, and those who fought for me to be here and a right to an education, really. But we need to support our young people and our young women. You know, there's a lot of us trying to get into these rooms that have been locked for decades and generations.
Janine mentioned something that, I mean, there are prejudices that we all face, whether we're white or Black or anything in between, and whether we're male or female, and that's prejudices against being too young and prejudices against being too old. Inshallah, we all get to the point where we're prejudiced against for being too old. But I think for sure women face that more. As Janine mentioned, young women are not thought to have enough experience or enough knowledge. Older women are invisible. I mean, people talk about this now. Maybe that's why I dyed my hair blue. I just didn't want to be an invisible older woman. But that adds in. And when you are a woman who's very young or old and Arab or and an immigrant or and Muslim, whatever, it truly builds up to be a burden that we have to face, that we have to accept. But I loved what Janine said. We all belong here. We all belong here, and we all need to be counted. This whole census issue is a huge one. I always check other, you know, on my census. I don't consider myself to be in that white category, although I've been told I can pass. So how do we keep pushing this for the more representation, either through the census or through, I mean, obviously what we're doing today is important. What ADC does is hugely important. Any ideas of where we can go from here?
So first, let me acknowledge one thing. Yesterday, I was in a meeting, and we were working on Stop the Hate Coalition, and somebody asked me, what does that look for you? So, and my immediate thought was, my lack of fear or absence of fear for me to show up as my authentic self, whether it be showing up with my blue hair or my Arab, you know, heritage, or with my locks or with my hijab, whatever it is that I choose to be, when I choose to show up as my true authentic self with all my hats without fear, that's what stopping the hate looks like for me. We have incidences, hate crimes, hate incidences, and our constant effort has been to make sure that whether it be the district attorney's office or the police department, acknowledge, record, categorize these hate incidences, because they are going unnoticed, and it takes a moment's instance to turn them into a hate crime. So I digress from what Cheryl's asking me. But that's what, to me, showing up myself, being given that space, as Janine says, breaking those barriers, opening those doors for young women, for immigrant women, that's what something that as a collective we can do, as a community we can push for. And laying the path out for our next generations to come. As a parent, I'm constantly thinking about how I can pass this passion I have for my community to my child and to her friends. And yes, they have a different way of doing things. You know, I'm an old school Facebooker, and my child thinks that's like a 100-year-old measure, although it wasn't around 100 years ago. So connecting with our youth, but giving them that level of respect is so important. Because I see that, you know, when we don't open those doors for our young people and you leave them, those doors locked enough, long enough, they're going to leave. Because guess what? On the other side, there are other vices that are inviting them. Either you open the right door for them or they're gone. And that's something that I am constantly trying to get my peers to understand and get on that train. Otherwise, because it's leaving our station. I'm sorry, you keep using these analogies. But I'm afraid of that. That's the fear that I have.
Wow, that's great, showing up. And all of you showed up here. I mean, this is what we need to keep doing. I wish the room were full, but you know, we'll spread the word. That's wonderful. Are there any questions from the group here? Yes. Yeah, we have to leave that for the young ones to answer. Go ahead.
Thank you for the question. I mean, I think spaces like this, I really believe that, you know, what I see in the San Diego community, that a way to start really is like having these internal discussions and conversations with all the generations in the room together, because there's so much to learn from our older generation and their organizing experience that set us up today, and our new generation who are thinking about things differently and have a different way of interacting with the systems. And I think it starts, yeah, with these conversations and these internal education sessions within our community, in addition to, you know, a lot of our community events that we're having. And I think we really have to be patient with each other on both ends. I know the stereotype is that the young people are hot-tempered and don't want to listen, but we do want to listen. We just want to be heard as well. I think that's the biggest thing.
Oh, I feel like there's a wealth of knowledge with the more tenured, you know, older generations. And imagine a situation where the older generations pull up the younger generations and mentor them and guide them and share with them their insight, but not just to impose or to duplicate their efforts, but allow the space for something different and new and fresh. And I see a lot of the newer generations of Palestinians coming up and having a voice that, you know, who knew? And I feel like there's a lot of strength there, and there's synergy that can happen with these older generations working and bringing up the newer generations and supporting them. So that was, I just wanted to add, I thought you had a fantastic answer.
Yeah, I don't think I could keep this younger generation down if I tried, but yes, I agree.
My name is Sohail Tubiya, and I have a quick experience to share with you. A friend of mine, State Senator Dave Min, who was our guest last night here, and he will be here tonight, was running recently against Katie Porter for representative for the District 48 here in California. They are both highly qualified. She is a professor of law at UCI, so is he, and very well accomplished. I have to share, and I share that with him, that I raised funds for her against him, though he's a good friend of mine. And the reason why, because she is a female. And I admitted that to him, and they're both highly qualified. And let me tell you why I did that choice, because of women like you. You're making change. You're making big impact. And that's why I was able to do that. And he understood that. And we remain friends. He is over here. So whatever you're doing is very impressive, and we are proud of you. So now I look at the background, your background, Ms. Nizam, you have MBA, financial consultant. Ms. Domingos, you're a successful nurse, you're a singer, you're a public speaker. And Ms. Araikat, BS in public health. And you all have different backgrounds from India, from Africa, from Palestine. And I don't want to miss Ms. Ferris. She is a well-accomplished lawyer. So you all represent amazing backgrounds. So the question to you, Ms. Nizam, you talked about discrimination in the family, misogynistic behavior back then. And Ms. Domingos, about the discrimination within your own group of people that you said you were discriminated by the black community. And Ms. Araikat, you work on the economic, social injustice with the immigrants. Since you started your activism up until now, have you seen major changes in what you've done? Can you feel it? Can you touch it? Can you describe it?
I see it right here. There's not a gentleman on this table. I see it right here. So that's a stride, right? When I first came to ADC, I saw the inching of the difference. And then when Doris was the president of the San Diego chapter at that time, I went in with no, I'm not Arab. So I was broaching into a new space. I was breaking those barriers. And I was like, am I carrying that mosque mentality into this group? Because it's a group of Arab men. But I saw that barriers were breaking down over there. And now I see it further. When Janine does amazing policy work, you go, sister, right? I don't have to lean on a gentleman to come and explain that space for me. Or mansplain it, as we call it. So this I see, this I touch, and I want this to continue because I have a daughter.
By the way, I wanted to add one thing. The reason I voted for Katie Porter, because she grew up under Elizabeth Warren, which I admire also.
I'll just add one thing to that. I'm sorry, Cheryl. I know that, you know, this is something that when you work in a political sphere, you're always laden by this, is identity politics. And I really appreciate you supporting a female candidate over a male candidate who was your friend. And we come to a crux sometimes where we deal with that, where we feel like we have to support a female candidate as a woman, I must support a female candidate because, you know, we've been outed for so long. It's time for us to support female candidates. But then we have to be really cautious about that too. And I know Ms. Porter. Ms. Porter has good policies. So it's an easy determination for you to determine one over the other. But in a lot of different cases, identity politics sometimes causes harm. Like, you know, I cannot just support a female candidate because she may be a woman of color alone. And her policies may be so anti-police, so anti-immigrant. So just to be cautious of identity politics as well, sir. And you know, please, my support's with Ms. Porter because I've seen her work.
You know, when ADC was formed, totally it was because as a unit, as Arab Americans, we are discriminated against, and people don't care whether we are Saudi or Lebanese or Egyptian, you know, we're just, or Indian, you know, we're just all tarred with the same brush, as they say. We shouldn't get into politics. It shouldn't matter whether you're Republican or Democratic. You're here, we're here because we share a heritage. That said, relating to progress, we're affected by the political swings, just like everything else is. So there are times in the overall political world that women's rights are strengthened. There are times when women's rights are lessened. There are times when racism is decried as bad. There are times when it appears that racism is exalted. It's kind of a, yeah, I'm old enough to have seen this swing back and forth quite a few times. So we are affected by that. Within that bigger political world, I think we as a group are making progress. Slow, steady, but sure. And of course, I'm looking at the younger generation. You know, you guys do it. We've done what we could, right? Yeah, thanks.
And I also have to add, because I see other people would like to ask questions. I agree. We're making progress in our community, but it's also, at some point, it feels like it's day to day. At some point, it feels like it's month to month. And Roe versus Wade was a huge slap in the face, where we feel like men, yet again, feel they have the right to decide over our bodies. So yes, that was 100 steps backwards. But as a community, as an intimate community, I feel we're making a lot of progress. But on a national level, we still need to do a lot of soul searching and figuring out when it's finally not okay for anyone who is not of a certain gender to determine what happens over that gender, especially women's bodies.
Thank you, and I learned many things more about you, even though I thought I am very close to you. One of the things that I'm passionate about is elections. You know, being an electronics engineer, I have always dedicated my community outreach to academia, inspiring underserved students to inspire them, mentor them, and make them successful, open opportunities. But I started to believe more that my time is more valuable if we mobilize and activate our communities into participating in voting. This is how we change policies. And politicians have scoreboards for communities. Communities who vote in the primaries, mid-elections, the primaries of the presidential elections, they have us designated as 5 out of 5, 4 out of 5, 2 out of 5 for those, and they listen more to those communities whose scoreboards are higher. These are the people they can count on because they show up and they care, they pay attention. I am from Iraq, and I have tried to mobilize my community, but I found out that their intention is to change government of Iraq, not through the politics in San Diego or in the United States. So what can you recommend to me to activate and inspire these communities to be engaged into the value of voting as a civil duty and right? Thank you.
I would love to go first. And I can only speak to Black women in San Diego. So for a few years now, there has been an event called Women of Color War Breakfast. It happens once a year, classically in the month of February, and we have a lot of elected officials, but most of all in that room, we have high school students, under 18. And the main goal is they come to that beautiful breakfast for free. They get to speak with all the elected officials that matter in San Diego. And what is the goal behind it? It is giving them a face-to-face with their favorite elected official, making them acquainted with the elected official, and most of all, planting the seed at a very young age for those that feel they need to run for office. And then internships are offered, paid internships are offered. I think it's important in the Black community, especially because we're often told we are less than and we don't really have what it takes, to have events like those. Like, we've had guest speakers like Kamala Harris, you know, women that really, really matter. Even Cheryl, I forget her, oh my gosh, her last name, she just won an Emmy. She was our speaker the year before last. And I think that's one way in the Black community that, like my friend Angela D. Joseph, has been able to bring women from all walks of life together for that one ultimate goal, which is educating young Black women on the importance of running for office, because who you have in office, especially at a grassroots level, because some people get caught up with, I only vote when it's time to elect a new president. People forget that who you vote for at the grassroots level is actually what makes or breaks communities. So that's my answer to that question.
What you just heard were the remarks and some of the questions and answers from the panel titled Women in Coalitions, Challenges and Successes. It was one of several panels organized by the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, ADC, at its 2022 Alex Saudi Memorial Conference and Gala, held in October 2022 in California. For more information about the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, visit the organization's website, www.adc.org. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.